is Noreen, and welcome to Defiant Hustle Radio. I decided to come back after my bout with the flu there in February that completely knocked me off my feet, but I'm really thrilled to be back. I love this show, and I'm really, really excited about this show, and I think it's going to be a really eye-opening show because we are going to talk about millennials, and for anybody out there, we know that millennials get a bad rap. If you saw my social media post, we wrote down spoiled, entitled, lazy, privileged, and failing at quote-unquote adulting. There's 75 million millennials, and I'm here with three, if you want to include Josh, the producer here, with three millennials. And I'm sorry to call you millennials as if that's what you represent, but two of which I met at the Greenwich Young Professionals Group. So I have here Ken Jacoby, who you were the former president of the Young Professionals Group, correct?
That's right, yeah.
And now you're just hanging out there. I thought you were leading the panel when I went to the event at the Work Well Win here in Greenwich.
Yep.
So you still participate. You've been there seven years.
I've been part of the group for quite a while, and there's been a lot of transition. We kind of go, I think one of the things about millennials is a lot of movement, people coming and going. Uh-huh. We can go into that a little bit, but we've seen a ton of people come to that organization.
I want to talk to you about that organization, but first let me introduce our other guest, whose name, as you anybody who listens to me regularly knows, I mutilate names. I like numbers, but I mutilate names. So Austa.
I did it.
And then say your last name.
Austa Kunchas,
and you're vice president at Greenwich Young Professionals Group.
Yeah.
So Ken Jacoby and Austa, and I'm not going to say your last name again, are here and were brave enough to come and join me tonight as we talked about the generation that is Generation Y, right? It's considered Generation Y. And according to my great internet research, it represents people who were born from 1981 to 1996. I know this varies a little bit, but that would make it 22 to 37 years old. And we are going to explore a little bit about what is considered the American dream and how the generations that I think are starting with the millennials are looking at it very differently than the generations that preceded them. But first, let's talk about the Greenwich Young Professional Group and what it represents and what its vision is for young professionals.
Yeah. We definitely have a very similar mission to some of the struggles I think that millennials face, which is trying to get people together in a formal setting so they can interact and network. With millennials kind of on the theme, a lot is on the phones and screens and whatnot. And it's just a different way of life. So we thought it was important to get people together face-to-face, talking, meeting businesses, getting their hands dirty, working with charities and organizations. So the group is really intended for people from, all over the area, not just Greenwich necessarily, although we're focused here to get people together, networking, and creating new business opportunities.
And Austa, how did you get involved? And you're vice president, so what motivated you to be involved with the Young Professionals Group?
Yeah, so I moved to the East Coast about 2 years ago now, and I work for myself. I have a digital company, so everyone I work with, my clients, the artists that I work with, everyone is online somewhere. So when I moved here with my fiance, who was relocated, it was difficult for me to, find friends, find clients, find a group of people that I really connected with.
Uh-huh.
For me, working for myself, I don't really have those opportunities. So, there's one thing going to the gym and meeting someone, but finding like-minded people, individuals who really care about, personal development, success, just driven young professionals. So I attended a couple meetup events and, it's a hit and miss. The organizations aren't necessarily, or like the meetups aren't regular. They're the venues, it wasn't a really great experience personally. And so when I heard about the Greenwich Young Professionals, I've heard about Greenwich and the surrounding area. I've been here for a bit. Like, I checked out the restaurants and, like, the local, you know, just everything that the community events here. And so that really sparked my interest. And when I came to one of the events, I was just so surprised at the amount of young, you know, young at heart people that were there, how diverse it was, just what a really great
It was really great. I had a great time at your event, and I loved the panel. And I thought everybody, it was at Workwell Wynn, which is an office sharing venue, so very representative of the new approach to work. But I thought everybody was lovely. I really didn't feel like it was dry. I really felt like there was a lot of warmth in the room, and I did connect with a lot of people, including both of you. So I really appreciate you being on the show. And if people are interested in going to the Greenwich Young Professionals Group events, how can they participate? Uh-oh, I told you I'd be the one with the technology issues. How can they find out more about it and participate?
We have a brand new website that Oust actually was integral in putting together at greenwichypg.com. And we have all of our information on events, sponsorships, partnerships, how to get involved. It's really a great site to kind of get all the information about who we are and get in touch with us. So
spell the site out again for our listeners.
It's GreenwichYPG, so GreenwichYPG.com.
Okay, so folks, if you're interested, I mean, I'm not a young professional. I don't know, I'm somewhere in a different age group, but I still went, and it was lovely, and I met people, and a lot of people contacted me afterwards. So you guys, great job. I wanted to get into millennials. And Josh, join us in this if you have something to say. Oh, I wanted to, you know, when I work with my clients, I work with them mostly around business nowadays, but around what I call the five pillars of life. So you've got relationships and love, you've got career or vocation, health and fitness, time and money, and professional and spiritual development. So what I thought we'd do tonight is talk a little bit about starting with relationships. And the contestants they're not really sure what questions are about to come at them. But if we go into the way millennials are looking at relationships, now, we pulled out one statistic based off of something we read on the National Youth and Risk Behavior Survey, but it pointed out that in the 1960s, adults between 18 and 29, 59% of them were married between the ages of 18 and 29, where today the number is only 20%. And despite that, 90% of college students do say they want to get married. So I'm curious, and anybody can answer this, what do you think is different between the way the certain generations are looking at marriage and relationships versus the way my generation as Generation X and the generations prior to that looked at it?
Well, you really have to look at the trends and what's available for us now. You know, you look at all the apps, and it's never been more accessible to find whatever kind of relationship you're looking for. You know, the dating scene is faster and more accessible than ever. You know, with apps like Tinder and Bumble, you can find someone immediately. So when you have that...
Find someone immediately to do what?
Whatever right. you want. So no, but it could, you know, it could really be that one night stand. It could be that, hey, I'm just looking for, you know, I'm looking for a deeper relationship, or I'm looking for a conversation. Like, let's see where this flows. So you have this accessibility of, you know, at your fingertips.
Technology is one of the biggest.
Absolutely. And you know, I think it's great. I think that this gives people the opportunity to explore, to go, you know, and, you know, figure out what they want, what kind of person they want, get it out of their system, really, because, you know, I think that we're enjoying our youth so that we don't regret it when we're, you know, 40 and 50 and settle down.
Oh, great. Ken, I have a question for you. So do you think, now, you're married, mm-hmm. and do you think it's satisfying, or that do you think there's a sense of fear of intimacy or something that's going on when you're generally meeting people and or hooking up or something like that? Or do you, I don't know. So that's my question for you.
I think expectations are that things, it's okay for things to happen later and things don't have to be as serious as soon. So I think a lot of what people are doing is just meeting and, kind of Alice's point, experiencing life and not wanting to have regrets. And there's not as much worry, I think, culturally in our generation to be settled and married at 23, 24. If it happens at 33, 34, or even 40, people aren't, I don't think, as concerned about that. So I think they're allowing themselves a little more freedom and flexibility until they're ready to, you know, commit.
Okay. All right. So, and I have down, okay, I was looking online and there was something that I saw on one of the audios that I won't bother playing, but I'll get to the heart of it. They were talking a lot about, even though that there's a lot of misogyny and sexual harassment that's taking place, being used, being perpetuated possibly because of access technology to the use of pornography or something, but that there's, it's more than ever, or maybe it's just become more, people have become more aware of it than ever. But do you find in your generation that there's equality between the sexes, or that there's still a level of misogyny or something that goes along with the technology?
I think it's always been there. However, people are getting called out by it now. You know, with the power of social media, if, you know, you see a lot of viral videos or videos going viral because of something someone filmed on the subway, you know, a harassment case or just a woman standing up to a guy. I think it's being called out a lot more than it used to. It's bringing a lot more awareness to it. So, I mean, you know, I think it's always been something that women experience, but now it's, you know, we're just gaining more awareness towards it, and it's not becoming acceptable anymore. Not at the workplace, not on the street, and the people who are acting out are getting called out for it.
Do you think your generation's seen positive examples of what a healthy relationship is?
I think so. I think people learn from the good ones and the bad ones. I think most of us have experienced and seen both. So I don't think not seeing good relationships is an obstacle that's stopping people. I think it's much more them just not being ready, whether that's financially or emotionally, from getting into a more serious committed relationship.
Okay. I actually have some younger men that come to me. Many of them are in very traditional fields and don't know where to go, but they do want to find lasting relationships. And I'm really honored when they come to me for some advice on how to even identify and know when they're in a healthy relationship. And I don't think that this is exclusive to your generation. What I do admire about it is that younger men will step up into this, where I think the generations, men in the generations that are a little older, wouldn't dare step up and ask for help with something like that. So I admire that. I wanted to read, I'm sorry, I love statistics, but in this same study, the same survey by the National Youth and Risk Behavior Study, they did uncover some surprising gems. So buried in the data was a revelation that almost half of millennials said they would support a marriage model that involved a 2-year trial, at which point they could either continue with the union or formally dissolve it, and that 33% said they'd be open to trying what researchers dubbed as the real estate approach, which means marriage licenses would be granted on a 5, 7, or 10 to 30 year like an adjustable rate mortgage, so that where the terms could be renegotiated after a certain period of time. So anyway, that's flexible and open-minded about things. And 21% said they'd give the presidential method a try, whereby marriage vows would last for 4 years, but after 8 years, you could elect to choose a new partner. So I think that's great. Josh, what do you think? You're hiding over there being quiet. What do you think of marriage? Why aren't you married?
Why am I not married?
Yeah.
Because I'm not ready to be married, and I don't want to be married at the moment. I'm 26.
Mm-hmm.
You came up with, actually, I was thinking pressure. You came out with expectations. There's a lot less today, I feel like if you go back to our parents' generation and then you look at their parents, right, like marriage and security was expected at a much earlier age, probably by, you know, 25, 26 years old, if I'm not mistaken. That's just what I'm thinking. So you're seeing marriages occur later, at a later date, at a later age, because quite frankly, there's more freedom for this generation. It's just a culture shift.
It's what I describe as the codependency, the need for security by women relying on their partners for financial support, and men having a family and having that kind of balance is going away, because now women, each partner can stand in themselves and support themselves emotionally, physically, mentally, and spiritually, and so they don't need the codependent relationships, hence not a desire to rush into something. All right. Anybody else on relationships before I move on to career? All right. You having a good time?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We're going on to career. Okay. Here's a place where it's interesting. Now, Ken, when you started out the panel at the Young Professionals event, it was a lovely panel, but you said something at the beginning. Maybe you remember it, but I want to say that your generation, I interpreted as you seeing your generation as being up against one of the hardest, most difficult times working your way into the workforce or finding job security. Maybe you can talk about it more clearly. But I did hear you say that at the beginning of that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, to be fair, every generation feels like they've had it most challenging.
Yeah.
But I do feel like there are certain obstacles that our generation has faced where I think it is more challenging to break through and be financially secure. I think the number one is the number of expenses that we have. I think a lot of generations before haven't had it. You look at cell phone bills, and some people are spending over $1,000 per year on cell phone bills. And then you take that as a percentage of your post-tax income, and it can be a pretty sizable number. And you take that for a couple more bills, and before you know it, your paycheck isn't going as far as you want. So I think that's the first obstacle that we've faced that our other generations haven't faced like we are.
What about student loan debt? Job security, what other obstacles? Ask them, what do you think about?
Yeah, that's so funny.
Because you started your own business.
I'm actually completely on the other side. I feel like whether you're an entrepreneur or an employer, there's more resources and opportunities out there than there ever has been. You know, the job boards online, if you're an employer, there's LinkedIn and Indeed, and whether you're a freelancer, there are platforms out there that enable a nomadic lifestyle, like Fiverr and what are some other ones, like Upwork and Envato. So, you know, as an entrepreneur myself, there's, not only is the market changing and we are, millennials are really disrupting the industry. We're looking at the products and businesses that are functioning now, and we're challenging them. We're saying this isn't good enough standards for us. We're either going to create it on our own via, a startup, or we're going to select businesses that we really feel passionate about and we're aligned with their mission. So, in my personal career, I built my own company through the trends that were happening. Entrepreneurship is very supported through government. There's online resources. For me, it's kind of like the way that I see it is if you have a laptop and you have something to share, something to give, you can succeed. Yes, it's digital, but there are so many opportunities out there that, I think it's like more limitless than it ever has been.
Okay, so now I run my own business, and once upon a time I used to work for people too, and I find it fascinating because I find if you work with people that are a little bit older, they have a lot of experience, but sometimes they can't adapt to the technology that's in place today, and really, and the technology, even myself a bit,
yeah.
just to work with Salesforce and the internet and social media is just not my nature as much. It's become my nature because it had to be. But so when you want the experience It's harder to, and even my clients can relate to this, certain clients, that you get the people who are a little bit older that will be more stable, but they're not as flexible or something to work in this environment. And then you get some people that are a little younger, but they're, I don't know, when I was coming up, especially on Wall Street, you just had to show up at work and you got there, mm-hmm. rain, snow, sleet, or hail. And there's a little bit more of a looser, well, I guess what gets described as about millennials is entitlement or something else that's going on. So why do you think that millennials get attributed with things like lazy and entitled?
I think there's more resistance to resistance, meaning I think our generation is a little more used to things coming easy, whether you no longer have to go to a library and research something. It's at your fingertips. So I think when people run up against issues or problems, there's a larger pool of millennials versus other generations that might not kind of push through the resistance. I see people, not necessarily where I'm now, but just in general in my career, where they're asked something from a manager and the answer is, I'm not sure, ask Cindy, ask John. That type of response of just passing it off and not digging deep, and even if it's not your area, I think those are the examples where we have to kind of push through.
Where your generation is, so you work in, you're a credit analyst, right? Mm-hmm. Risk. And so in your generation, you're saying is or isn't pushing through?
I think there's a larger pool of our generation that doesn't push through. I think they're kind of used to your point, getting things a little bit easier, and when they kind of get pushed up against a struggle within their career, sometimes I think they aren't as adept to kind of getting through it.
Why?
I just think that it's not necessarily easy, and they don't have to do it, and they have been a little bit more entitled to be okay saying no or I don't know this, rather than having to push and grind to figure out the answer to make something work.
When you look at customer service and you can get everything by like a click of a button, you can Amazon Prime's 2 days. It's no longer do you have to wait a month to receive a package or something. I think that's where millennials get that very quick, satisfaction of receiving something. They just think it's really easy. So when there is a struggle or they do have to dig in and find a solution, it could be more difficult for them. They're not, they're used to just having everything right away. But that being said, I really wanted to talk about, how like the title of this whole radio show, how millennials
Defy and Hustle?
Yeah. No, sorry, about the topic. How millennials are, lazy, entitled, selfish. There was an article that from the Times called Millennials, the Me Generation. Uh-huh. And the first thing the author, Jill Stein, points out is what older people have done throughout history, calling younger people lazy, entitled, and selfish. Uh-huh. It's always like that. So that's not new, but what is new is how millennials are doing things. From the way that we date to the products that we support and, of course, like the workspace environment. So as with all generations, all transitions, there needs to be that mentorship, but you can't leave those millennials behind because they're onto something. They are the future. So it's kind of getting that balance, creating that workspace that, that's comfortable for both, that fosters this mentorship, but also makes room for business, for entrepreneurs to create, or sorry, for young, millennials to create the future.
Well, what I think is fascinating about millennials is that they are not going to, in many cases, they're just going out there and building their own businesses. I mean, that was unheard of.
Yeah.
And so what I know you talked about having a vision to improve society and looking at what the corporations really stand for that you're supporting,
yeah.
and whether they're having a positive impact on the community or the
culture.
The
environment, anything, yeah.
And I wanted to hear about pay because my generation, the generations before you, were motivated by loyalty to your organization or who would pay you the most. And I don't find, even with my business, which is a little boutique, that pay is the single motivating factor. So why don't you talk a little bit about that? Well, which one? You go, Ken.
I can go first. I think both are extremely important. I think it's kind of a cliche, but one doesn't work with the other. And I think what's great is you can be both. You can kind of have a stable job and still be an entrepreneur with all the tools out there. I have a book about my college baseball experience that I wrote and that I market and publish.
And what's the name of the book?
Going with the Pitch.
Okay.
It's on Amazon.
You were a Division One baseball player in college.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I had, you know, big learning experience. I wanted to share that story. But to be able to publish and market it a generation ago was impossible. The fact that it can be done on demand, you have Amazon, there's social media. Me and my wife are starting our own business too. She's going to be preserving wedding bouquets and whatnot. You can do that and have a job. You know, you can kind of build both up at the same time. And I think that's one huge benefit of this generation is the Uber type generation of all this digital access and whatnot, when you need it, allows you to do both at the same time.
Asta?
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with that. I have so much to say. I just don't even know where to start.
I think, personally,
it's come down to it's not the money, it's the experience. You know, I've realized, and I know that so many other millennials, you know, they don't want to wake up 9 to 5 and work for something that they don't enjoy and don't believe in. Mm-hmm. So we're more likely to live in our parents' basements and spend money on trips traveling Europe, you know, cultural and just like figuring out what you want to do versus, you know, and taking those 2-3 years to figure out what kind of business, you know, finding the right business to work with or for, and what to do in a career versus just, you know, I have to pay the bills. I need to get married. I need to, you know, like this plan that, you know, our parents went through. I think that, yeah, millennials just...
Is it because you feel secure where maybe the generations before you didn't feel secure? So this allows you to operate on a different level without thinking. Like, do you worry about putting money away in 401ks and things like that? Or do you just live in the moment and expect the money to come?
So I used to live in the moment when I was 18, you know, and doing those. But you know what? I got it out of my system. And, you know, all the places I've traveled and all the, you know, all the people that I met really shaped me into who I am. But, you know, of course, now I'm looking at, you know, I'm thinking about the future. It's more about investments, you know, investing into my business, investing into, you know, real estate, investing into different companies. But in order for me to have a balanced lifestyle, you know, so that my 9 to 5 every single day is enjoyable, not just those weekends.
Okay. And I heard some talk of... living with parents, living with grandparents. Do you think this is healthy? I mean, or do you think people just start, many, like you guys are successful, but do you think this is unhealthy for people or healthy? What is your opinion, Ken?
I think it's healthy to get in. I think that situation can help a lot, can give you some savings and whatnot. I think the danger is staying in too long because it becomes too safe, where you can't get out and experience the world and stumble on your own and simple things that, you know, you might not realize your parents are helping you with, whether that's filing taxes or whatnot, to be kind of on your own, I think adds value all in its own right. So I think you just have to balance the two of them so you can take advantage of the good parts that your parents or, you know, whoever else is helping you can do, but not take it too far where it becomes a negative.
Yeah.
I would let somebody adopt me right now and take care of me. Because, well, one of the things, because, like, just paying rent and being single, I don't know, it's expensive to be single, too, and have to pay rent. And so the next topic, when we get into money and time, and Josh, you could always chime in, is the rent versus buy scenario on homes. And according to, of course, my research, there's 3.4 million people missing from the ranks of home ownership. And one of the studies I read said even the mortgage companies can't figure out a way to give a mortgage to the millennials, in part because so many of them are self-employed, or they're not showing something that shows they would be secure in a mortgage. And so there's these homes sitting on the market, and everybody starts renting. So I wanted you to talk about whether why people are not motivated to get a home, or whether they want to get a home and just can't.
Yeah. I mean, I can only speak from a personal experience. You know, over the last 10 years, I've been a nomad and I've loved it. You know, I've lived, you know, traveled 35 countries, lived in 5 countries, and I didn't want an apartment I didn't want anything to tie me down. You know, and it was just more, you know, one year I'm here, the other year I'm somewhere else. So it's just kind of like, I didn't want that burden. And maybe young people now do want to experience, you know, travel more and live in different cities. And renting just allows you to have that flexibility. That being said, you know, you look at New York rent prices, and you know, my fiance and I are certainly looking for places to buy, just because, you know, the rent's so expensive, and it's kind of like, oh, if that's not going into our mortgage, it's tough. At the same time, when I speak to homeowners, the amount of money that they put into their homes every single month, it kind of goes, you know, with the renovations and everything, exceeds what I'm paying for in a very comfortable, you know, luxury apartment. So that being said, it's not a huge necessity. You know, I'm very comfortable the way that we are, and I want to be flexible. I want to be able to move, you know, to another country if the opportunity does come.
To another country. All right, and then so let's talk about student loan debt. Do you know people that have, Josh, do you know people that have student loan debt or that are being stopped by this? Because my understanding is the balance is $1.5 trillion of people who have, cumulatively, of people who have student loan debt, that they're having a difficult time paying it down. And it's just stopping them right off the bat. So maybe you could talk about getting jobs out of school, or whether it makes sense to go to college, which was essential when I was coming up. You had to go to college. So anybody want to talk about going to school and whether it's worth it and incurring the debt to go to school and whether you get a return on that investment when you come out?
I mean, I think you have to go for certain jobs and whatnot. I don't think even a graduate degree will get you a guaranteed cushy job. I think those days are over. So it's a little bit difficult, because if you go, you're going to potentially take on a lot of debt. And it's going to be difficult to pay it back and see the returns. But if you don't go, you know you're probably not going to have as easy time making or being successful. Obviously, these are generalizations. A lot of people go one way or the other and do just fine. But
trade or something like that. And do
exactly, well. Exactly. But in general, you take on a lot of debt without any guarantee that the job or the return will be there. So it's definitely, I think, scary. And I think a lot of people just get used to $500, $800 monthly payments just out of the pocket. And that definitely weighs down on the housing market.
What jobs, what do you go to school for now that you are guaranteed to get a job? Or what should you stop going to school for, which is guaranteed to not get you a job?
I think that it depends where you're going to go and what type of school and how much you're going to pay. If there's certain jobs, you might want to think twice about getting $100,000, $150,000 into debt if the pay is, you know, let's say $40,000, $50,000, which is a shame, because some of those jobs are very important and fulfilling. And, you know, there's always talk, especially as elections come up, about trying to reform the system to reward people who are going into careers that might not pay well, and so they don't have to be burdened with student debt.
You started your own organization. Did you ever work for anybody else, Alsta?
Yes, I have. So going off with what Ken was saying first, you know, I think it's really important for people not necessarily to jump into school after, you know, without knowing what they're doing. I think the biggest difficult, like what's so heartbreaking is, you know, watching so many high school friends who went to 4-year, whether it's Ivy League or, you know, they went to really great college, spent so much money, and they're not even working in that career field. You know, I was fortunate enough to have parents who were very supportive for me to take a year off before going to school. Even when I did, you know, go to school, I went to, you know, I got admitted to a university in Toronto for a marketing program. And at the same time, I found a job working as a VIP host for an event agency. So it was kind of like, you know, greeting VIP guests, whether they're celebrities. Bruno Mars was one of the celebrities one night. And so we brought, you know, we bring him to the VIP suite and we, you know, we kind of cater. So it's a kind of events agency. They took me out to dinner about a month into school and they said, listen, we're expanding our company. We want you to be our first employee. And I knew a month into university that this isn't the way I learn. You know, the books, you know, everything that they're teaching me through these books isn't, it's just not, it's not, I'm not taking it in, you know, I'm not, it's just.
It's not street smart.
It's not street smart, exactly. And after being in Hong Kong and seeing how entrepreneurs, you know, have stores on the street, you know, you have the hairdresser and the locksmith, you know, everyone's on the street.
That's hustling, right?
Yeah,
you have to have a
absolutely.
Certain amount of hustle to get by nowadays.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so,
I think so.
So that's how my entrepreneurial path, you know, started. You know, I didn't go back to school until 5 years later after, you know, I knew exactly what I wanted to do. And even so, I went to a community college. I immersed myself in 14 courses, everything from, you know, editing to studio photography to journalism. And I aced every one of the classes. I loved them. It was a really great experience. That college invited me back a year later to do a promotional video for them, and it paid back my tuition. So, you know, that's the only student debt I've ever had. I've had parents who are very supportive, and, that's kind of how I made my way. But unfortunately, you know, their student debt is definitely a problem for a lot of Americans.
I think it stops people in their tracks. Oh, I wanted to talk to you about something I wrote an article about. I read an article that was a BuzzFeed article, and it was about millennials, but it talks about something called decision fatigue. And so do you know what I mean by decision fatigue? Josh, you ever hear that? So apparently, especially the millennials, they were talking in part about why millennials don't go out and vote more. And the author of the article interviewed a few people, and she was finding out that younger people, not just millennials, they find it outdated, like the process is outdated, and so they called it high effort, low reward tasks. So that time has become the primary driver in life, more than money, and how you spend your time is so important. And if there's tasks like voting that requires all this information, and I guess you can't just do it online and press a button, but you have to take a day off and go stand on a line, they're like, I'm not bothering with this. This is, there's not a lot of reward on the end. So I experienced decision fatigue just running my business. Do you find that you're exhausted or finding a hard time deciding how to use your time?
Yeah, I mean, the time is as valuable of a resource for sure as money. And voting is a great example because it is a process and it's frustrating. When I recently voted, you know, you had to go in and put the little circle dots, which still exists in this world. I don't know anywhere else that still exists. And not only did I not remember all of my votes, although I tried to research as much as possible. When the night of the results came out,
sorry.
It's okay. When the results came out, A, I couldn't exactly find anyone who I voted for, but B, I had trouble finding the results because it wasn't online and whatnot. So that's a perfect example of what I'm going to go and spend an hour or two before work doing this whole process without any feedback of whatnot. So I think there's certainly instances where you have to question, how much effort and time am I going to put in? What am I going to get out for that?
Don't you find there's so many choices now? Like, when I was a kid, but there was only so many jobs to take. There was only so many products to buy. Now you have to look at everything for such a long time because there's 20,000 shampoo options, one for colored hair, one for, you know, straight hair, curly hair. It's like you have to look at everything for such a long time. It's like just narrow it down a bit. But do you find this, or you're just comfortable with so many, even so many people reaching out to you on social media or anything like that? Go ahead, Al. No?
I'm used to it. Like when you think about the products, you know, I think America does that. You know, you go into no other country do you go into the aisles of their supermarket and see so many different cereals or so many different shampoos. And, you know, I think that we all have products that we like to buy. You know, millennials are eco-friendly and, you know, we're more natural driven. You know, we want to buy products that are good for us. So that whole industry is changing as well. And there are, you know, new products are coming out there that are catering to our needs. But I feel like that's always been there. When it comes to, you know, spending time at, you know, going to vote or the DMV, I think these are great examples of, you know, millennials are going to come in and fix it. They're going to come up with faster and more innovative ways of doing these things. So I love that it's irritating us and that we're not dealing with it, because companies are going to change to cater to us. You know, if millennials aren't voting, you know, the government's really going to start putting resources into making that process easier.
Do you think so? Do you think that people at a certain age group are paying attention, or that they should be,
or else they'll be left behind. So there's a whole industry of businesses coming out there, you know, that are, it's called the Blue Ocean Strategy.
Okay.
It's been written about. I certainly didn't make this up, but there's industry norms of businesses that are out there, and young businesses are looking at ways to do things better. Do things, you know, it's all consumer based. It's based on what makes your life easier. How can I make your life easier?
Like Uber, for example. I mean, that was revolutionary.
And Google,
Airbnb,
and even Google. You know.
Yeah,
keeping track of what we're like looking at on our search engine, you know, when we're searching on Google, you know, they filter out products to target towards us because they know exactly who we are. So advertising is getting a lot smarter. Marketing is getting, you know, like businesses are definitely consumer focused these days.
Do you find that people are truly feeling connected when they're using social media, or that they're actually connecting but not getting the emotional connection that they're really looking for?
Yeah, I mean, Alice is in that world a bit more than I am, but I think from a user, it gives a connection, not the connection. Uh-huh. There's certainly a place for it, and I think it's amazing to stay in touch with people and get news and whatnot. But back to what we were saying at the beginning with our young professionals group, there's also an important place for something like that where people can escape out and have more face-to-face interactions and get those connections.
Yeah, like a real conversation, one of the things that attracted me so much to YPG was the venues that they chose. It's, you know, Saltaire, it's Equinox, it's these cool places that the vibe's amazing. And so they collaborate with these businesses and they really foster that, hey, like, you know, let's have some appetizers, let's have some drinks, like let's all, you know, let's have this community where you can finally go up to someone and talk to them.
I found the young professionals group not very informal. It was formal, but it was so easy to connect with people. There wasn't any pretense. I didn't
people
find that.
People go there to make friends. You know, we've had surveys go out, and some people go there to find, you know, even a partner for a relationship, and not only business partners, but it's something that social media will never be able to replace. And I love that there's still a big community that values this and does want to go out there and meet people, and, you know, just that interaction you get and that energy when you're interacting with someone in a room, you'll never be able to get that on social media.
I wanted to move on because we're getting close to the late hour, but I wanted to ask Josh, do you go to the doctor for preventive health care?
I mean, not as much as I think I should. I'm a little bit neurotic, so like when the slightest thing happens, my mind goes crazy. But no, I don't go.
Do you start researching it online?
Yeah, of course I do.
And so traditional doctors or anybody can get involved with this. What I read about millennials is that, okay, 93% of millennials do not schedule preventive health care visits with their insurance-provided primary care physicians. Instead, they use urgent care facilities if they get sick, or they access medical advice online, or they choose to read blogs. And according to a Nielsen study, millennials are far more prone to look for alternative medicines for promoting their own health, including dietary supplements, natural food, and vitamins and things like that. So, what do you think is going out of style about traditional medicine?
It's expensive. I mean, what does a walk-in visit cost versus paying a monthly premium?
What do you think about it? Do you have health insurance?
Yeah, I have Husky, but you like, you know, that's paid by the state. But like, the negative to that is that no specialists take Husky. Anytime that I have a problem, whether it's, say, like with a foot or with a back or with, you know, stomach problems, I can't see anybody because the specialist won't take Husky. The only option that I have is to go to the emergency room and then to see somebody through a hospital.
And what do you think that traditional medicine is getting wrong with regard to something our whole culture is starting to adopt, which is looking at things holistically? You go ahead, Ken.
I mean, yeah, I think part of that world is a little bit the old model, back to what we're talking about, and voting and getting immediate feedback. You can go to a walk-in clinic that is kind of built upon seeing you, diagnosing you, giving you a prescription, and being back by lunch, setting up the preventative care. You have to find the right doctor, move to a new area. Good luck trying to figure out how to find the right doctor, maybe a referral, maybe some of these websites, but it's very challenging, and you have to get an appointment and follow up, and you have copays and whatnot. So I can definitely see a lot of people using healthcare when needed, not as a preventative measure, but yeah.
I think there's certainly a place for doctors and medicine, but personally, my philosophy is not that there's a pill for every ill.
A pill for every ill.
Absolutely not. I think that there's new research coming out there. People are becoming a lot more aware that, you know, the word disease is your body's not an ease, dis-ease. Mm-hmm. You know, millennials are really in tuned with the results of, you know, bad eating, you know, malnutrition. They see how that affects them physically and mentally. They know that everything that they put inside their bodies is going to, you know, it's going to determine their mood for the next day. You know, that's why meditation and yoga and just healthy eating, that lifestyle, is becoming a lot more popular. You know, my experience with doctors is, you know, you go there and they try a million things and, you know, it's like a hit and miss. You know, try this pill. Oh, sorry, that was the wrong one. Try this one, versus the holistic, you know, for just one example, my brother got bit by a brown recluse. A brown recluse, it's one of the most deadly spiders.
Oh my God!
He was in between a hospital and an Indian, territory. He went to see the Indians, right?
Uh-huh.
They gave him activated charcoal, detoxed his body, gave them this bath, and he was cured. You know, natural. Uh-huh. It's going back to, you know, Chinese medicine and the power of herbs, and you know, these are all things that are planted on earth and that our ancestors used to use. And so when you're looking, so that's kind of my philosophy, is I would rather try that holistic approach first, you know, to cure myself. And then, but obviously, you know, you break a leg or something, that's where, you know, I'll go to the emergency room. But when it comes to, you know, the only time I get sick is when I'm overworked and I'm exhausted and I'm drained. And that's my body saying, hey, if you're not going to take a break, then I'm going to make it's a mandatory break.
I want to get to one more thing because we only have 2 minutes. So you were talking about meditation. You're talking about getting back to nature. Spiritual development, we were talking about it being Ash Wednesday today, and that we didn't see anybody with the ashes on their forehead. Talk, we have 2 seconds, so maybe very quickly, what do you think is the difference between the way
traditional religion, again, traditional versus the way younger generations are approaching spirituality?
Really quickly, I just think it's the institutions. They're outdated. Mm-hmm. You know, what is the Catholic Church who is a priest to say, you have to speak to God through me, mm-hmm. you know, versus, you know, I'm very spiritual. I was raised in a Catholic family, but I don't go to church. You know, I can take that moment and pray and direct, you know, have that direct connection versus, so I just think that's outdated. But sorry, go ahead.
Think people quickly are finding other replacements to fill that void that are equally as spiritual, might not be a building with a steeple, but there's other groups and whatnot that are replacing that for some people.
You do think people feel connected to something larger that maybe
absolutely
the generations before didn't had to filter through some higher party or something like that in order to feel connected.
Mm-hmm.
And there's I'm going to just tell you and then there's self-worth issues that maybe the religions, institutional religions, project onto people to make them feel a little bit small.
Yes.
And I think people are coming around that and just saying, I'm directly connected to something larger, and I know it.
You nailed it.
Thank you. On that note, thank you very much, Asta and Ken and Josh tonight for talking, being on the defense. But I think millennials, I think it's fascinating to watch everything that's being changed in our world as the institutions come down. Thank you for listening to Defy and Hustle. This is Noreen Ehrlich. And take care, everybody. We'll talk to you next week. I've been quiet for too long. I've been quiet for too long. I found peace in your vibes. Can't show me there's no point in trying. You're listening to the Voice of Greenwich. 1490 WGCH Greenwich.